Like I was saying before, we have a lot to do. Tavshin Ayin Zayin is quickly coming to a close. It's coming to a climax, hopefully. We have a lot to accomplish. And let's lay out some of the themes. We started yesterday talking about some Yanim Rosh Hashanah. I'd like to talk about a little more. And after that, we'll head to the Beis Medrash and to move forward in Masechah Sukkah. First, let's our last day together. Remember, we have four open issues in Yanim Rosh Hashanah. The mystery of Malchus, Zecharos, and Shofros. The seeming Iser of the Apple Nani. The riddle of the mitzvah of shofar vis-a-vis other mitzvahs. But let's begin with what we left off with yesterday. We started talking about slichus yesterday. Yesterday we had a chance to look appreciate the larger significance of the common Ashkenazim minhag of having around a week of slichus. So 4+ days in advance of Rosh Hashanah. But just to talk for a little bit about the practicalities of slichus. It's important, slichus are very long, and slichus are certainly an example, a great opportunity to apply the principle that appears in Shulchan Aruch, even for regular davening, of tov ma'at b'kavana mehar b'shalo b'kavana. A little bit to say fewer words, but with more focus and more thought, is far better, Shulchan Aruch quotes, than to say plenty mindlessly. So it's important to appreciate the structure of slichus and how they work. Like the rest of the Siddur, there's underlying lumdus that's driving slichus. It's not just a collection of paragraphs, one after another. There's a structure. If you appreciate the structure, you appreciate the tefillah more, and you also understand how to triage and how to prioritize how you use your time. The most central part and the most ancient part of slichus is obviously Hashem, Hashem, Karach, V'Chanan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara describes, whatever this, we don't know exactly what this description means, but Malamed, Shemes Atev, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tashiach Tzibur, HaKadosh Baruch Hu portrayed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu as though he were a chazan putting on a talus, preparing to daven, lead the Tzibur in tefillah, and daven on behalf of the Tzibur, and taught him how to say, Yudgim Yiz Harachim. And that's, remember, part of the Yom Kippur story. That's happening over the course of that time on Har Sinai that we return back to every year, Elul and Aseret Yitzchak, leading up to Yom Kippur. That's why the period leading up to Yom Kippur, whether it's just 2 weeks or so, or whether it's from the beginning of Elul, Minhag HaSfaradim, which is very apt from this perspective, but the most critical, slichos are really about saying, Yugim is Harachman, Bitzibur. So we say them, and then we sort of, the gem is placed into a setting.
Sorry to interrupt, but to the Rebbe in particular.
So the gem of Slicha, of Yugim is Harachman, is placed within a setting of Putin. And the Putin that we say together, Yugim is Harachman, is specifically called slichus. You may have noticed in your slichus that there are different subcategories of slichus. There's the pizman, obviously, that has a chorus, and then there's the shnia, the shlishia, the akeda. Some of those categories have to do with the meter or the pattern, the poetic pattern. Some have to do with the content. Throughout, for instance, akeda, throughout the, one of the things we add to the slichus of Aseres Mei Tshuva, there's always an Akeda. There's always one Slicha that focuses on the Schus Akeda. And Bechlal, over the course of Aseres Mei Tshuva, we add Slichas, which really means we're adding to the number of times that we recite Hashem, Hashem, Kevach, and Vachanam. So instead of just saying it, repeating it directly, we set each one off with another slicha. But those are piyutim that's supposed to enhance the amiras yud gil amiras harachem, and that's the most critical part of the slichas. So certainly, I would say, you know, it's critically important that you join the tzibur for that. So I would say, if you feel that you can't, you don't have enough time to say the entire slicha thoughtfully, so then say part of it. Say start with the tzibur, start each slicha with the tzibur, and when they get up to either when they get up to kederach habayim, or when they get up to Hashem Hashem Baruch Bechanan, so you stop wherever you're up. Do join them for yigul mizrachim, and then you pick up with them onto the next slicha. And that's the most reasonable way to approach it. The second most important part of slichas, the second most ancient part of slichas, my father-in-law is fond of pointing out, are the litanies at the end. We sometimes get less excited, less energetic, and less enthused about it. It seems some more repetitive. The Aser Leman Amitecha, Aser Leman Brisecha, the Leman, Leman, Leman. Those are the most ancient part of the slichas. After, obviously, second to Hashem Hashem Karach Mechan, that's the way that the Tanam seem to have done a lot of the love. And Avinu Malkeinu, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Akiva already began, he may not have said all the lines that we say, we have a very long Avinu Malkeinu, but prior there, Paitanim took Rabbi Akiva's pattern and added to it. But those types of very repetitive, sort of like the patterns that keep being repeated, but each time with a twist, those are part of the most, many of them probably date back to the days of Tanam and Ram. Those are very, very, very important parts of the slichas that should call for heightened focus on our part. The truth is, it's because of this that Yom Kippur is the day when slichas are most appropriate of any day of the year, which is why the old minhag was, the Torah records, old minhag was they would say slichas for all in the context of all five of the tefillahs of Yom Kippur. In the machzorim for the last couple of centuries, they ended up cutting out the slichas for shacharis, musaf, and mincha. So there are hints to it. In my room, we say we don't have tzcharas hashatz, but we say slichas after Shemana Esrei. Ne'ilu, we have slichas in the middle of the chazaras hashatz, and then the machzor, the Ashkenazi machzor, as we have it, has fingerprints of the slichas. The zachar rachamecha, the part that comes after slichas is there, leading into the vidui. But the actual Hashem Hashem karach mechanim set off with the piyutim with the slichas, and that got cut out for any one of several possible historical reasons. That's why there are a number of shuls that have the Salvation was very intent on reviving the minhag of saying slichas. That's arguably the most central of any piyut that we add to anything that we're going to add to Chazaras Hashatz of Yom Kippur. Rav's argument was the most important addition to the Chazaras Hashatz is Hashem Hashem Karav B'chan, is the slichas. So there are a number of shuls, a number of you, I think, attend shuls, that have, not adding, have brought back the slichas of Yom Kippur. Again, that's the most important day of the whole year for slichas. That's why the old minhag was to say it at every possible turn. And obviously it reaches a climax. And Ila, the climax is reflected by the fact that the number of iterations, the most iterations of the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachem, you say Yud Gimel Midas HaRachem more, you say Tzeres Me'etshuva more times than you say it over the course of the end of Elul. And Yom Kippur, you say it more and more times, and Ne'ilah you say it many, many times, again and again, and sometimes the slichas do get very short to allow for many, many iterations of Yud Gimel Midas HaRachem. Obviously, the one hopes that's not just a question of quantity of times you're saying Yud Gimel Midas HaRachem, but the kavana behind it, hopefully, is reaching a climax as well over the course of the slichas of Ne'ilah. Which brings us now to the first of the three things we had left hanging. Remember that riddle? Something like this. Shofar on one side, on the other side you have lulav, you have the Torah, halal,
Kriyashma. I'm thinking this morning is there is a mitzvah that we can add the same side of Shofar. It's not totally unique. Add Birkas Kohan. Maybe you can even add Vidu. Anyone notice anything that this set of mitzvahs has in common, but that these are still different? Category one are still different than category two. Think. Double 10, what do you say? Ooh, the only thing we do in shul is you want to get a nila down here also. And the whole mitzvahs that we do, which are not just in shul, but in the context of davening. But only shofar, and duchani, and vidui, do we perform in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. These are all very important mitzvahs. Kriyas HaTorah is an important mitzvah. Torah, Ham Torah, and Kulam. We lay in conjunction with the davening. We don't lay in the middle of our Shemoneh Esrei. We don't shake lulav in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. We don't say Kriyas HaTorah has to be next to Shemoneh Esrei. Smichas lulav tefillah is very important. The Ma'am Bracha says that the combination of tefillah and Kriyas Shema and tefillah with proper achadas in advance is kavozo malchus shamayim shalema. So there will be a lot of thematic overlap, but we don't say Kriyas Shema in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. The shofar, duchani, and vidui, Yom Kippur, are in the Shemoneh Esrei itself. Halo davar. The question, the thing that involves shofar in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. It's sort of used to, you expect that to happen. You stop and think, that's a very unusual place to do a mitzvah. Go after, before, we go before, you know, go afterwards. In Milosh Manasra. In Milosh Manasra. And who are you davening in the Sitzvar? Who are you davening in the Sitzvar? How many of you davening in the Sitzvar? True. Right? So you know that the Sitzvar is going to show for a wedding. Not only during Chazor Sashatz, Mam Shemel, the quiet Shemel Esrei.
You're not switching.
Really? In the quiet Shemel Esrei. Really? In the quiet Shemel Esrei, you blow shofar. So what's the shot? What's the type of shot? This was one of several proofs that the Salvation used to develop the idea that the shofar is not just a mitzvah. Lulav is a mitzvah. Maybe lulav is not. But what the talks about how all of the mitzvah is Torah is a mitzvah, important mitzvahs. But shofar is not just a mitzvah and a mitzvah that goes along with Kriyash, with Shemoneh Esrei, like Shema does, but actually it must be a form of tefillah. Shofar itself is like a wordless tefillah. Maybe some other time we'll develop a greater length in the intersection of risk and wrestling and understanding what tefillah is, but you see clearly that tefillah is not just about saying words. That's the way we usually do it, right? But the essence of tefillah is not particular words as much as the connecting to Ribbono Shel Olam, the seeking out of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam describes in Perek Daled Hilchos Tefillah to be aware of the fact that one is omed l'fnei Hashchina. A visualizer of standing before Ribbono Shel Olam. So shofar is almost like, Rambam developed very poetically, it's like a primal cry. The kid is crying because he's crying that word. It's like a calling out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, a very kind of deep feeling. The truth is that, as we'll see soon, it might not be the only type of unusual style of tefillah that we adopt for Rosh Hashanah. And then the other two also. Vidui is not tefillah, but Vidui needs to be lefnei Hashem. We'll talk about that the other night. For the Rambam, the mitzvah. If not a mitzvah to do tshuva, the mitzvah is when you do tshuva, when you change, the person is engaged in the process of change and growth and improvement. It needs to be a conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And after this, Vadem Lefnei Hashem. So we take advantage of the Lefnei Hashem opportunity of Shemoneh Esrei, which presents us with the highest level of Lefnei Hashem, to be Mizvah Dadem. Duchenin is actually a form of tefillah. Duchenin, no one appears in the Shemona Esrei because Karen Ora suggests because Duchenin perhaps needs to be in conjunction with Avodas HaKavanos. So we have a Beis HaMikdash, at least it'll be in conjunction with the Tzeh, where we talk about the Shaman Parvus of Haseinim. We compensate in we have a little bit of a taste of Karbanos through our Tzeh. In addition to that, Birkas Kohanim itself is a tefillah. No, the Golden Rites. What do you mean to give a bracha? What's a bracha? Not saying a bracha to that kind of bracha, but rather a bracha. There's kind of something different. They give a bracha to a person. Your bracha to a person is a type of tefillah. It's grammatically, from a grammatical standpoint, it's phrased differently. But usually a tefillah, yeah, it rests on Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because Baruch Hu is in the second person, and the subject of my tefillah is in the third person. And say, Kadosh Baruch Hu, please heal him. Heal him, Rafa, Allah. Majority says, Kadosh Baruch Hu, please heal Miriam. And that's a classic of tefillah. You talk to Kadosh Baruch Hu about her. A bracha is you go like this. You address yourself to the person, you say, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu do X, Y, and Z for you. Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu bless you. And it's a bracha, because the tefillah, where I address the, I'm being misspelled to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but grammatically it's phrased as a address to the target of the tefillah. And I say, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should do this for you, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should do that for you. That we call a bracha, but it's really a type of tefillah. That's why all of these appear in the Shemona Esrei. And I mentioned before that, sure. I don't think we assume that vidui is a tefillah, but vidui does share with tefillah the lifnei Hashem aspect. I think as far as I understand, we're taking advantage of the lifnei Hashem opportunity of tefillah. Once we're in there, be misfollow, so we're going to also take the opportunity to be misvada. And the Paitanim sort of crafted language so that it's a seamless transition. In other words, we cast the vidoy in the context of bakashas also. So we could sort of seamlessly move from tefillah to vidoy and back to tefillah. But the reason why we put it there to begin with is because there's no better lifnei Hashem moment. Let's turn our attention to, we'll come back to shofar from Machzor Kavanos to shofar. Let's first step away. Let's go home for a couple of minutes. And what happens at home? So you come home from shul, Shana Tova, take a save, you say chasemi, right? And you sit down to a colorful table. Not tamarinds, but if you follow the Menhagim, the Gemara mentions, so you're having a leek and black-eyed peas, and if you have the Yiddish version of those, you're having carrots, and for the last several centuries, it's been minig Ashkenaz to have honey-dipped apples. And Ramah, it sounds a little bit like there were maybe also some had candied apples. It's hard to know the original having candied apples or dipping apples in honey. Certainly, because Ma'azeh, the minig is to take the apples and in real time dip them into honey. If you take a look in the Be'er HaGrah, the Grah's notes in Shulchan Aruch, the Siman Tav Kuf Pei Gimel, in Aruch Chaim, where this Siman Rosh Hashanah appear, he actually says, why the honey we understand is because we're looking at Shana Tov Mesukah. And the Gemara in Harius presents, increases in Harius, presents some of the other Siman they mentioned that are no longer as popular to us, as familiar to us as the apples and honey, but the ancient ones. The Gemara says, Yehiratzah, you have the Rubia, Yehiratzah, and Hebrew Zuchah, Yosenu, and so on. So with each one, the tefillah, it's a play on words, on the name of the food. There are some who assume that you don't have to be limited to what the Gemara had in Aramaic. That's why the idea of having carrots, because carrots in Yiddish are merin. The merin also means more, to increase. That's why you don't have rubia, but you have the Aramaic twist pun on increasing. You can have merin, carrots, which are the Yiddish pun on increasing. And Rabbi Goldwecht is the want to give out dates at his Rosh Hashanah table. And he says,
dates is tavati mashma. Should have good dates. His talmidim are a couple years older than you, and at that age it is a halachic imperative, perhaps. Certainly halachic desir adatim. That one, if you're ready to get married, halacha strongly encourages you to date. You can see yourself married within a reasonable time. Things could progress at a natural, unfold naturally. So good dates. Davar b'ito, not so. The Vilna Gaon says, in terms of the apples and the honey, so the honey, you understand, Shana Tova Masuka. Why the apples? You have challah and honey. You eat challah anyways. So why the apples? Why apples? I don't know, because that's what they had. The Gaon says, they had other Gaon said, they found all the fish and honey.
Actually, salmon.
Honey salmon is very good. Yeah. Why the apple? You know what the Vilna Gaon says? A fascinating Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon says, he says it's Kabbalistic, because Yaakov Avinu walks in to get the bracha from Yitzhak. And what does he say? He can't see, but he can smell. Reach Hashem, Reach Hashem, Reach Hashem. Okay, and the Vilna Gaon says, Al Pi Kabbalah. That's a reference to there's a constant Kabbalah, I don't know what it means. I can tell you the name, the Chakal Tapuchin Kadishim. The orchard of the holy apple trees. I don't know what it means. That's what the concept is called. It says that's what Yaakov Yitzchak is referencing. So he smelled the sacred apple fragrance. And then the Vilna Gaon writes, V'haya Barash Hashama Kayadua. As we know, the Birkas Yitzchak to Yaakov, which was one of the pivotal events in Jewish history, so that was one of the expressions of the Chiras Yisrael, happened in Rosh Hashanah Kayadu. Now the Svarim, there are pre-Rusha written super commentaries on the Be'er Avra, the whole discussion, not so funny, that probably Mahol, many Midrashim assume it happened some other time. They have Pesach, the Vilna Gaon is obviously assuming, like the minority of being the Midrashim, that the Birkas Yitzchak to Yaakov was on Rosh Hashanah, and that we're taking the opportunity to sort of like reconnect to that, remind ourselves of that Rosh Hashanah event at the table. And that's part of the thing when you dip your apple in the honey. Remember, this is like a reminder of Bechiras Yisrael, a reminder of the unique role that you have to play as a member of Israel, a reminder of the unique Kadosh Baruch Hu created all of humanity, but there's a particular closeness, a particular intimacy that Klal Yisrael enjoy. And that's what the Mishnah says. Chav v'ad Mishnah v'b'tzelem, all of humanity are created b'tzelem elokim, and Chavim Yisrael, shenikru b'am l'makom. And Parshas Re'eh, Klal Yisrael have this unique moniker of Banam HaKem Hashem Lokecha. There's a greater intimacy, a greater ease, a greater closeness. So that's part of what we're celebrating and reminding ourselves of and challenging ourselves with. To grow, to live up to being a Ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To live up to that level. So that's Ohayav Rosh Hashanah Kayadua. If that all began on Rosh Hashanah, the Birkas Yitzchak Yaakov, so the apples of Pi Kabbalah reminds us of that. Beautiful. Problem with all this is, though, it's all very nice, but why isn't this in the Siddharaisa? After all, the Chumash says in Parashat Shoftim, a long list of occult practices that Jews are forbidden to do, and one of them is Lo Sanah Hashem. Torah talks there about not to be involved in necromancy, being connected with Mason in occult ways. Torah talks there about not trying to magically predict the future, not to be a kosein. The Torah says you should not be minachesh, which Rashi quotes from, and the Rambam quotes from the Sefrei, means not to be superstitious. Not to say, a black cat crossed my path, so I'm not going to just gonna go home and not go to work today because it's going to be a bad luck thing. So Rashi doesn't talk about in the days of Tanoim, there was a black cat in a different pagan tradition. The pagan tradition that Chazal had to contend with was a tzvi, a dear person I passed, bad luck today. Maybe I'll just go home, go back to sleep. Not doing anything, it won't work out anyways. Right? Or things of that sort. Oh, my stick fell, that's a sign that things aren't going to work out. So to do that, to behave in that way, is a lav doraisa. If a Jew says, oh, black hat crossed my path, forget it, it's not going to go to work today, that's like eating bacon. It's like holding your girlfriend's hand. It's like wearing Shabbos. It's a lav doraisa. Mamash a lav doraisa. Lav doraisa. So the question is, one second, this doesn't seem like a particularly good way to start the year. Right? Let's come home from shul after an inspiring night of davening shul. Let's come home, the mitzvah of kiddush and the avera of nichush. That doesn't sound like a particularly wise recipe for the first meal of Tavshin Aichetz. So, ma pesher advar. And to Gemara, the Gemara in Priest Nahari says he's supposed to do this. The question is, how is Amoraim? Why does this, how Amram recommended this, why is this not under their purview, why does it fall under the rubric of Nichash, Noam and Yosef?
Why would it be
with
Nichash? Nichash is saying, because something happened, and you're governing yourself based on it. This is, you're hoping that this will be your reminder for, what you want, your aspirations for the coming year.
Oh, very good, very good, very good, yeah? Very good. Right. So the truth is, yeah? That's a great question. Let's come back to Ein Hara in a couple moments. That's a great question. You're saying something very important. The truth is that the post can develop. I'm not going to look at the Gemara's now inside, but there's a surprising Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara says it's only Nichush if it's like Yonasan and Eliezer. Gemara in Chulin thinks Daf Tzadiyeh. If you don't do it like Yonasan and Eliezer did it, then it's not a violation of Nichush. Kol Nachash Einokri, Yonasan and Eliezer, Yonasan and David, so Yezer Abed Avram, Eino Nachash. The Tosa says, what? Those two Tzadikim are the examples of an Atheira? They're the paradigms of Chet, Yonasan, and Eliezer. Number one, what are the stories? First, Eliezer. Eliezer is more famous. Right. And he says, the girl who made the simon, right? The girl who's going to say, Gamlu with Malacha Eshav. So then, Gamlu Malacha Ashkeh. Then, now she's the one for Prius. Right? What was Yonasan's simon? A little more advanced, same control. Yeah.
Oh.
That was his father. But that was his father. His father Shaul. Sorry. No. That's what people often assume. The David by Yonasan and David, but that was just a code. That was a code communication. The warm. You gotta back up a little bit.
You're so close.
You're so close. No, it wasn't the honey. It's near there. It has to do with a mountain. Right. Well, he says he decides to go out with his Nosei Caleb. Just Yonasan, the son of Shaul HaMelech, and his Nosei Caleb. And you said two of them. We're going to go on a kamikaze mission to infiltrate and take down the Plushti garrison. They're pushed them on a mountaintop, which obviously treats Egypt advantage. And he says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to call to them. We'll make ourselves visible, and we'll see. If they say we're coming to get you, we're going to skedaddle. But if they say come on up, then that means we're going to go up and we're going to rout them. Right? And Kachava, the Plushtim say come on up, Yosef goes up with his nose to Caleb, and they totally rout the Plushtim. And then comes the honey exactly. Later in that story. Good. So the question is, so those are two
episodes that the Gemara is talking about. Basically, what Tosfos wants to know, the other Rishonim said, their example of chetz, I mean, they did the wrong thing. Do they? So the Rishonim point out, no. But the Gemara means, to make a long story short, the following. It's only nichush, it's only nadeira, if you have two conditions in place. One of which is demonstrated by Yonasan and Eliezer. The condition they demonstrate, if you're not like them, it can't be nichush, is that it has to be something you actually act upon. Because they were really basing behavior, it was a real heuristic. They were basically making decisions and basing their future behavior on this sin. If she says this, then I'm going to offer her to marry Yitzhak. If she doesn't say it, then I will not offer her the ship. Like Yonasan said, if they call us up, we're going to go up. If they say we're coming down, we're going to run away. They're really basing behavior on that sin. If not, then that's what we call simon bialma. It's nice. We have a simon bialma. We like to have sensual honor if it's okay to want to get married out under the stars. Outside instead inside, Tachas Kibbutz HaShemayim, it's reminiscent of the bracha that Ravinu gave, Hashbal gave to Avraham Avinu, and that would be like the stars. Very nice, beautiful. It's not nadeira to do that. Why? But we don't assume that if you can't get married outside of that, you're going to have a sad marriage, and it's going to be miserable, and you're not going to have children, and if you get married outside of it, it'll be wonderful. It's nice. It's an aesthetic. It's like it's nicer to be dressed nicely for the wedding. It makes it more beautiful. So the spiritual aesthetic is to do it in a way that reminds us of these brachas. To get married at the beginning of the first half of the month when the moon is growing. The Sen Shulchan Aruch, it's mutter to try to get married during the beginning of the month. If you actually think that if you get married at the end of the month, it's going to make for a diminishing marriage, and like you're going to wait months and months and months in order to get a night where the hole is open the first half of the month, that's already a problem. But you say, look, this is nicer. It's simon bialma. It's not like Yonah's son and Eliezer. You're not basing behavior on it. You don't think it's actually changing the things. It's just nicer. But nicer is fine. Simon bialma is fine. So they, with them, it wasn't just simon bialma. That Yonah's son and Eliezer are actually basing behavior on it. So why was it mutter for them? Well, it was mutter for them, Tosfos and the Ran point out, because they didn't fulfill the other condition. Because what they did was mutter, because it was
logical,
sensible. Tam tov v'davar. Eliezer was looking for a girl who would be a Baal Chesed. And not just a girl who would be a Baal Chesed, a girl who would be willing to. Baal Chesed. Everyone's Baal Chesed sometimes. We're talking, number one, intuiting needs, anticipating what the real needs are, and we're talking about doing 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 times as much as you were asked to do. Camels drink, I forget the numbers, tens or hundreds of gallons of water at a time. Maybe even more. I forget, I looked at this one. And he came with a whole herd of camels. Massive. He asked her, could I have a drink? Could I have a person to take a drink is a fraction of a gallon of water. Right? To offer, and I asked for a couple of cups, and you're giving me hundreds of gallons of water, that's A, extraordinary dedication, and extraordinarily proactive chesed. I'm intuiting what needs to happen. I'm looking at the situation. I'm saying, I understand you're saying this, but what you really need is that. I'm just going to give you that. That's an extraordinary expression, very profound, very sophisticated and mature type of chesed. So he absolutely was basing behavior on it, but it made a lot of sense. Now the Gemara says he may still have been taken to task for the fact that he was looking only at chesed. Chesed is very important. There are other things to consider in addition to chesed. The Gemara says he may have been taken to task for jumping in without looking at the bigger picture also. But nichush it was not, because it was real decision making, but it was reasonable. And how about Yonah's son? Why was that logical? I want to take a stab at that. No pun intended.
Because he was
because he wanted to, I mean, he had this mission, so in order to, it's logical to see that if they come down to him, then it's like they're in control and they are confident in themselves, even though they don't really know like what's going on. But if they say, we want you to come to us, we have everything, then like...
Gevaldik, there's a whole troop of Plishti soldiers up top. There are two Jewish soldiers down below. They have a massive advantage in terms of numbers. They have a massive advantage in terms of strategic positioning. They're on the mountaintop. They have the holding all the chips. If they don't say, we're flying down at you, they clearly have low morale. It makes no sense for them to say, oh, come up here, come up here. Charge down and destroy them. That's what Rishonim said. It wasn't Nichush because it was actually logical. He was testing their resolve. He was testing their morale. And the morale was clearly very low. And which is why he said, it makes sense for us to go. Or Ron says, if I say I have an umbrella near the front door, and every morning before I leave, I look out the window, and I decide whether I take an umbrella based on the color of the sky. If it's blue, no umbrella. If it's gray, I take an umbrella. Is that nichush? Probably not. I am basing behavior on that sign, but it's logical. If it looks like it's not going to rain, I don't take an umbrella. If it looks overcast with heavy gray clouds, and it lights up this gray, I take an umbrella. So that's not nichush for that reason. Yeah.
Two examples seem a little, because the case of the second case where he's debating whether to charge up or not, he thinks that there's a miracle that's going to happen, because a miracle is going to happen if this condition is met. He's going to go up and charge the Plishtim, but not only is he going to charge the Plishtim, he's going to kill their entire army. So he's saying that there's a miracle that's going to happen if the condition is met. I'm saying in the case of Eliezer, he's just saying, oh, if she's a really nice girl, then I'm going to ask her to marry. But if, in this case, he's saying, if this happens, I'm going to be counting on the miracle that I'm going to be going up and I'm going to kill the entire Plishti army all by myself with just one servant.
So that's a good point. We've shown him, I think there's a long run, in, I think there in Chulin, quoted by the Kesef Mishnah, the end of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. Who assumes that it was? There certainly was Siyat Dishmaya, but it was, but he was looking for was something that was, that there was a logical basis to what he was doing.
Yeah, but it's really logical. And just because it, like, it had no morality, he's definitely a miracle that he was able to feed the entire army, right?
I'm not sure. You're right, you're making a good point. One could have argued that it was, it doesn't sound like there was a Tom Tobin number. But I would say, on the other hand, I'm not an expert in military strategy in ancient times, or in modern times, for that matter. But number one, it could be that there was Bederach HaTeva that he won. Obviously, with Siyat Dishmaya, like the rest of our lives. Number two, even if it was a nace, but at the very least, what he was looking for was a sensible piece of the puzzle. He was looking for something that made it more likely that it could work. That, I think, at the very least, is true. I think, yeah, it is.
So you can make the argument the other way, but in the case of what because if Mishra is on top of the mountain, which is a great, I guess, strategic place, and it's also, I guess, maybe smart to be on the defensive, especially when they're talking about the way up. It could be said that
that's a good point. So it sounds like a valid story.
I'm not an expert, I'm just thinking.
Yeah. Could be, right. Sure. It's worth taking a look at the Farm Kulin to see if other Rishonim interpret other. But the Ron Duffy says that, and the Ron seems to be the Mahal that gets called La Alaka. There may be Rishonim, other Rishonim who disagree. Yeah.
So if
these
are valid Samad, why is it a
Chayt?
You said they're based on logic.
Oh, so that's what Rishonim said. Tosa says, and Ron says, the Gemara didn't mean that Yonah's son and Eliezer actually violated Nichush. The Gemara said anything that's not like Yonah or Eliezer isn't Nichush. So what Roshan pointed out, that Yonah and Eliezer are a great example of one of the two necessary conditions. They personally did not violate Nichush because they didn't fulfill the other condition. What they did,
Well, first condition is that you're actually basing behavior on it, not just a nice simon. You're actually acting on it, which they are an example of. And the other condition for it to be nichush is that it's senseless, which they did not fulfill because what they did was senseless. So if I say, going back to the examples of Chazal again, if I say, a deer crossed my path, I'm just going to go home and go back to sleep, I'm not going to bother going to work because a deer crossed my path, bad luck day, that's nichush. Because you're basing behavior on something that makes no logical, no scientific basis, no logical sense. Yeah?
At what point does logical become, like, let's say if you're going to try and, because, there's been bad luck over there sometimes, so what do you define logical on?
I think we showed that I have a scientific explanation. Now, it may well be, I'm not an expert in your triangle, it may well be that it's an area that's particularly storm prone, and there may be, if you're thinking of flying from the Bermuda Triangle, you should do your homework and find out, is there valid meteorological arguments to be made for avoiding that area? Perhaps there is. But it doesn't mean it's heebie-jeebie. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a world, and Kadosh Baruch Hu created a system of physics and chemistry within which he created a universe. So we need to assess the situation based on our... based on our best understanding, state of our understanding of the scientific systems and Rosh Hashanah created, and figure out, the Derech HaTava, is there a reason, is there cause for concern, or not? Yeah?
So if somebody has
I'm not sure, because all the examples of Simana Bialma that the Gemara has are usually understood to be usually interpreted being good things. I'm not sure. It's a regression. I'm not sure. Now let's come back here. Now that we developed Nichush a little bit, we're still going to open questions. They bring it back here. There are these two approaches that Rishon and Achronim have to the Simani Rosh Hashanah that seem to accord with these two issues. The Meiri writes that it's a all those items on the table are supposed to be Me'orer Mitzvah, and he explains that many of those species, either they grow quickly or they regrow very well. They tend to be simanim of growth, simanim of changeability. They're reminders that people can change too. Don't think that I'm locked in the way I is what I is, to quote the great philosopher Popeye. Don't think that I is what I is, and that's the way I always was, that's the way I always will be, and the kachaza. No, people can change. If you assume a fixed mindset, as Carol Dweck talks about, so then that will be a self-fulfilling limiting prophecy. If you assume a growth mindset, that I could change, that's the whole essence of the idea of tshuva. That just because I'm in a certain place right now, it doesn't mean I'm stuck there forever. But Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us an incredible gift of the ability to reach within and change. That's what the gift of tshuva is. So he says, these are all things that will be ma'orer me to tshuva. That's the Meiri's approach. If Yaakov Melisa, the Nesivus, has in his Sefer Nagata, Emes Yaakov, he writes a very fascinating approach. He says, there's a Rabban in Bereishis Perek Yud-Beis who wonders, why did Ribbono Shel Olam send Avraham Avinu hiking across Eretz Yisrael? Kum hishalech ba'aretz la'arka l'rachba ki l'cha etanen. Ever stop for a moment to consider what that pasuk means? That's L'Rachba is Miyam Miyam. It's a couple of days out. L'Arka, that's Shvil Yisrael. That's weeks, if not months. That's a long trip. So the Gemara is a Machlokes HaNoyim, whether this was the Kinyan on Eretz Yisrael.
Sometimes I'm of the opinion that our Rabbeinu, Kalai Yisrael owns Eretz Yisrael because of Avraham Avinu's height throughout the land. Then you understand if the Hiluch was Konas, you understand the objective. But if not, right, now, I have the Kilucha. So if Kilucha Etanema means through walking it, it will become yours now. Okay? You understand why it was important? That was the Kenyan. That was a nice Sakina Kadosh Baruch Hu. If you say that he wasn't Konas Yisrael then, it was just a promise in the future, Kalai Yisrael will take possession of Eretz Yisrael. The future now, hike through the land that your great grandchildren will one day have. Because what on earth? What if I'm a people have to have so many missions I'm on a people? There's so much important work you have to do. Why is it taking out months to go hiking? What's the significance of that? What's the objective? What's the goal? Ramban writes something very, very impressive. He says that this idea of Osai, Rabban writes, is a key not just for that one paragraph in Chumash, but a tool to use in understanding many, many passages of the Tanakh, and that is to realize that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives a message to a Navi to deliver, as a Nevuah to deliver. Sometimes the Nevuah can be magnified. Sometimes the Nevuah can be strengthened by not being merely delivered verbally in words, but by being acted out as well. Sometimes a Navi has to also be one. Every once in a while, Yechezkel is told not just to tell Klal Yisrael about the upcoming Churban, the siege of Yerushalayim, but to make a model of Yerushalayim, build a little siege wall around it, and line the side for so many days, and line the other side for so many days, and Yechezkel has to eat the bread, Ezekiel bread, and they have many different grains, and Hosea is told to go marry a Zona, and that's going to be a symbolic of how Klal Yisrael are reacting to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And all these, or the Navi doesn't just tell Shlomo HaMelech that the Malucha is going to be torn in half, and is going to be, in the days of his son Rechabam, a split between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, Malchut Tzad, Malchut Yehuda. Navi actually takes the clothing and rips it to demonstrate what he's saying. What? Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men, didn't understand what the Navi was saying. He needed audio visual aid to explain it to Shlomo. And Shlomo understood well what he was saying. Why did Nevi'im, everyone's wanting to act out a Nevuah? The answer is, says Ramban, it's not just a question of education and good communication. It actually makes Nevuah stronger when there's a po'al dimyon. That's what Ramban calls it, a po'al dimyon. When there's a po'al dimyon, when there's an action, a pu'ula, that's domeh to what you're saying, you act out, physically act out what it is that you're saying, and makes the Nevuah stronger. Says the Nesivis, maybe that's true not just for words of Nevuah, but also for words of Tefillah. Maybe a Tefillah can be made stronger if I actually act it out in addition to saying it. You know what that means? You know the most important part of the apple and the honey and the carrot and the fish head? The most important part is not what goes into your mouth, but what comes out of it. Because really, according to the Nesivos, it's really the point is the Yiratzel. I'm being mispalled to Kadosh Baruch Hu. But my tefillah can be made even stronger if I accompany the words of tefillah with kinesthetic acting out of the tefillah. I'm going to physically symbolize, physically portray with actions what it is I'm saying. Just like the Nevuah accompanied with an action is a stronger Nevuah. Nesiva says a tefillah accompanied with an action is a stronger tefillah. So Nesiva says, as what emerges from Nesiva is to eat all the foods, but after you never get around to saying the Yiratzon, it's not only putting the cart before the horse, but it's losing the horse entirely. The whole point is the tefillah. But we're going to, sounds like, and it goes back to the Rav's bar on Shofar also. In other words, Rosh Hashanah is a day when we pull out all the stops in terms of tefillah. Not only do we daven more, we try to daven like as many types of tefillah tools as possible. We daven with a Shemoneh Esrei, we daven with a Shofar. We even want to daven with the Paul Dimyon. So I imagine if we start acting out the tefillah in shul, that would be it's more comfortable perhaps and more apropos. Instead of having a kiddush in the middle of davening, where you're handing around apples and carrots, so instead you do it at home. But really, it's right after kiddush, a challah, the first thing you do at your yontif suda is to daven. you're davening with the food. Say the Yiratzin, and you act out the Yiratzin. How are you going to act out Shenifer Mirber Kedagim? Eating fish. How do you act out Shirbu Zechuyosenu? Eat something that sounds like rove, whether it's rubia or carrots. How do you act out our tefillah for a sweet year? Eat something sweet. But it's really, it's an add-on. The food is an enhancer of the tefillah. That's probably pshat and tashlich also. One approach to tashlich is we really said tefillah. So the Meiri, some say that it's a hisorus, like the Meiri said about the Simani Rosh Hashanah. The other approach is to say that it's a pol din of the tefillah. Not only are we going to daven the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the tashlich and the yom kol chatosam, we'll act it out. We'll go stand by the water, and like some say, you shake the dust off your clothing to symbolize what it is that we're davening for, that the dirt on our neshama should also be, metaphorically speaking, tossed into the water. And it's a good opportunity to remind everyone that it is an issur drabanan to feed wildlife on Shabbos and Yom Tov. If you have domesticated animals, whether they're farm animals or pets, and there's probably more of your pets than farm animals, but as the case may be, if animals that rely on you for food, the din is that you may and must feed them on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But animals that do not rely on you for food, then wildlife, the wild birds, you have a bird feed in the backyard, so it's very pretty and beautiful opportunity to enjoy Kadosh Baruch Hu's bria, but you're not allowed to restock the feeder on Shabbos Yom Tov. That's an issur drabanan, to feed animals that do not depend on you for food. So that's why you should not throw bread, even if bread is healthy for fish, and I suspect that's probably not. Probably. Even if it's a nice thing to do, you go do that to Chol HaMoed. I'm not sure how much the ducks actually enjoy matzah. But either way, on Shabbos Yom Tov, you should, there's no reason to throw bread into the river, and it's even in Easter de Rabbanan. Questions, yeah.
Why do we need any of these theories of the Meiri? Because we don't base our behavior on
no, you act, but you actually, you're insisting on doing this activity.
That activity is
a
behavior.
And it sounds like you're assuming this is gonna, this if you ask, many people would say, oh yeah, if you dip an apple in honey, that's gonna give you a sweet new year.
That's for sure. We don't, let's say we did the apple in the honey, and then we say, now I know I'm gonna have a sweet new year, so now I'm gonna go gamble or something. We don't
Right, you're right. It is a little bit different, but I'm choosing to do something in order to. It sounds as though magically create something, and that sounds like it's at least nichush, if not worse. And the answer is no. This is not magic. It's not. I don't think that the eating apple honey is going to make my year sweet. Either there's a tam tov, there's a good explanation. The logical explanation is it's an enhancement of my tefillah, which we believe works. That's not magic. Or it's not really supposed to do any, it's not supposed to change anything, not just mill more than Simon of Yalma, but it's really meant to inspire me. Gave me in the zone the reminder of the possibility of tshuva, of Rami.
What did the Meiri say about Tashlech? And what was the name of the opinion that said Tashlech is a whole different?
Neither of them spoke about Tashlich, I don't think. But the Meiri spoke about the Simani Rosh Hashanah. I think it's Meiri and Horios. A few days, I believe. And the other approach, the Paul Dimon approach to the Simanim, is the Nesivus, and his Sefer Emes Yaakov. Emes Yaakov, the Nesivus, the Sefer Anagata. Question to that. It's a good question. What it might mean is that it means that it'll happen. It could be, if you look at Ramban carefully, it means that even if it's a nevuah l'ra, it's locked in al kapanah. Correct. But what you see is that polydimium can enhance the power of verbalization. In nevuah, as appropriate, dun mi nevuah uki biasra. Nevuah enhances the power of the nevuah words. And in tefillah, perhaps, right, the Rabban didn't necessarily have to hold the Nesivus. The Nesivus says maybe that's a broader concept, that in general, that words that matter are strengthened, that spiritually matter, are strengthened by being accompanied by acting out. That's a chiddush, right? It's not mukhir from the Rabban.
But the Sefer says, but once you have the idea of the Ramban, maybe this is going on, maybe it's going here as well. I want to very briefly end with the last piece. So far we spoke about Slichas. And that the scene Slichas was primarily a presentation of Yigal Mimis HaRachamish, go back to this period of the year. And we spoke about Shofar as a form of Tefillah. And how that's why Shofar, explained among other things, why Shofar appears inside the Shemoneh Esrei itself. Number three, spoke of Simoni Rashana. That's also, according to the Me'iri, it's an inspiration, according to the Nesiv, it's actually also a form of Tefillah. And not surprisingly, on Rosh Hashanah, we're trying to daven as many ways as possible. And finally, Malchus Zichronos and Shofros, which is the context in which Shofar appears within the Shemoneh Esrei. So I'll just share with you, Mamish, a very, very brief kernel for thought. And that, I believe it's Rav Yosef Albo Sefer Ikarim, who says the following. Malchus Zichronos and Shofros, what's it all about? Important ideas. What exactly are those ideas? Why are they the three ideas? Do they appear elsewhere in Yados outside of Rosh Hashanah? Says Yosef Albo, those are the Ikari Emunah. We're familiar with the Rambam's count of Rambam's enumeration of 13 Ikari Emunah. Yosef Albo presents three that could also be taken as a categorization of the Rambam's 13 to three major categories. The first five Rambam's animamins are about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God exists and that He's the cause of all existence, that He's one and unique and the only power monotheism around the world. He has no body, He's not physical, He's beyond the physical, that He is beyond time, right? First and last, means time beyond time, timeless, and that He should be the only target of our avodah and tefillah.
The first one?
That He is, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the creator and continues to be the source and cause of all existence. So the first five Ani Mamim is all about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And trying to understand who is, speaking very loosely, who is this God that we believe? What is it that we believe about HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The next four, Ani Mamim 6, 7, 8, and 9, are about Nevuah and Torah. The belief that God, that Nevuah exists, that God does communicate with people. The belief specifically that Moshe Rabbeinu was the uniquely supreme Navi, which means that his Nevuah was a unique reality, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu transmitted Torah through Moshe Rabbeinu, through this unique type of Nevuah, and the belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's conveyance of the Torah to us was a permanent event. Once you believe in Torah's Moshe, in Torah's Moshe is built in, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us he doesn't plan to swap it out for something else. That's obviously that speaks to, and it's a rejection of both the Catholic belief and the Muslim belief in Waqf, that the Apikursus said, yeah, God spoke to Moshe, but then He sent Yashkar Muhammad and superseded it. That's illogical. If you accept who was Moshe, then it's illogical to accept a supersession. So those are four, and the next to those middle four animamins are about Torah. And finally, the last four are a belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is aware of what we do, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to what we do. Sarv Yonish. Several Sfarim Rambam point out that logical corollary to that, which Rambam did not count as a separate animam in Perush Mishnayos, but does seem to consider as a separate yisod or ikar in the Mishnah Torah, is Bechira Chavshus. Because the whole notion of Sfarv Yonish presupposes that we're actually making choices, otherwise what would we be rewarded and punished for? And then finally, Yemosa specifically, Sfarv Yonish in general, specifically Yemosa Mashiach and Tchias HaMesim. So those 13 sort of fall into three basic categories of Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Torah, and Sarv Yonish. Or what Jonathan Sachs likes to refer to as creation, revelation, and redemption. That is also Malchios, Shofros, and Zichronos. Malchios obviously is about Kadosh Baruch Hu, and not just the Kadosh Baruch Hu is out there, but he's Melech, he's involved in running the world. Shofros, if you look at, the Shofros refer to different historical Shofros, but the bracha begins after Niglesa, specifically with Mamre Har Sinai. And finally, Zichronos is all about the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu is aware of what we do and that Kadosh Baruch Hu responds to what we do, which is the last set of Ani Mamos. It's not just Malas Rav Shofar is, you know, something. I don't know, Psukim. No, it's Psukim. Those are Zani Mamins. That's a review of Ikari Amuna. What it really means is that the mitzvah of Shofar and the discussion in Rishonim, whether it's just with the fact that you want to blow Al Seder at Brachos, means to intertwine the Shtikiyah Shofar with Malas Rav Shofar, is a discussion whether it's just Drabanan, or that might be a Din Daraisa. It becomes now much more fundamental. What it means is, on the one hand, shofar is an expression, a very deep, a visceral type of tefillah. It's also being intertwined with all the Ikari Ahuna. It's powerful stuff. And that's the din, to blow shofar in the context of all the Ikari Ahuna. Machas and Chronos and Shofars. There are beliefs about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our belief about Tzar Yonash and the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's involvement in our lives, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a specific set of expectations for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares and has communicated with us and communicated to us his guide, his vision for what our life can and ought to look like. That's Machiz, the Kronos, and Shofros. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzar Yonash, and Nebu and Torah. There isn't much more fundamental than that. So all of a sudden, once again, like we said before, at tefillah, all you long we daven. But Rosh Hashanah, we sort of like take the daven to a whole new level. Not only more of it, but a whole new tools in our toolkit. We're daven with the shofar, we're daven with the siman, we're daven with the tashlich, with the pole, dimyon. So, emuna also, all year long we believe. All year long we ought to be considering actively what we believe in. But Rosh Hashanah, we take it to a whole new level. Don't just believe in the animamins. We blow shofar in conjunction with the animamins. We talk about them, we have psukim for each to give expression to different aspects of these ideas, and we intertwine it with the shofar. That's how we contextualize the shofar with the whole breadth of the ideas that form the basis for our whole belief system, our whole perspective on the world. So these are some of, and now we return to where we began last week. I told you, Baruch Hashem, you've been had the opportunity for close to a decade and a half to learn Yoni Rosh Hashanah every year. And yet there's so much more. We'll close with the following sketch. Just to appreciate what we've begun to do over the last two shiurim on Yoni Rosh Hashanah. How many people here have younger brothers? Okay, pretty solid. How many people here have younger brothers than they, not just 2 years younger, like a lot younger than they? How many of you remember your little brother's tzitzis part? Yeah. How many of you have older siblings that already have children? How many of you have been a nephew's tzitzis part? So I'm not chassidish. If I was chassidish, I'd probably make upsharing for my children. They had three. I'm not chassidish. I'm like upsharing. The idea of upsharing is the chinuch into celebrating the chinuch into the mitzvah of Hashanah's pace, or avoiding that Beirab kind of pace. And a tzitzis party, a kid talks about tzitzis. Because you make it part. You celebrate the fact, you celebrate that the old minhag from Shofar many, many centuries ago, to have a party around three, to have a suit to celebrate the kinesa into learning. Very, very elaborate minhag of some of the Chacham Ashna then. Imagine a tzitzis party. Right? The kid gets up on the chair, he's being followed, trains, ready to do a tzitzis, gets a 3-year-old, gets up on the chair, and he helps make a bracha out loud, everyone asks him, he puts on the tzitzis. The size three tzitzis, probably like puff paint mitzvah train, and something else, something beautiful. And everyone claps, everyone smiles, we're all excited. And we should be excited, Baruch Hashem. It's a beautiful, sweet thing. Began the mitzvah tzitzis. Now fast forward. Imagine, you know, he's no longer the 3-year-old, is now 13, or 23, or 73. Still wearing, or 93. Still wearing that size three tzitzis, which by now is choking around there. No one is celebrating the fact that the kid is wearing the teeny tiny child's tzitzis. Because it's obvious to us, the physical aspects of our yahadus have to grow with us as we grow older. But Dr. Kamensky pointed out, it's less obvious, but far more important that the intellectual, emotional, spiritual aspects of our yahadus have to grow with us as we grow older. And what has had the bracha of being exposed to Yiddishkeit at a young age, of having met Shemona Esrei when you were 7, having met Avraham Avinu when you were 4, having met the Mikra Megillah when you were 5, it's a great bracha to be
to be thankful for, but it comes with it comes with a potential cost, which is you could forever after stick with the 4-year-old was understanding our own menu, the 7-year-old was understanding Shemoneh Esrei, right? When you were 4, your Mora appropriately gave you an age-appropriate standard on the menu. But clearly, Bereishis is also for little kids, but Bereishis is not only written for little children. Purim is not just a young book for kids. When you're a kid, it's appropriate to understand as a child. But you could, if you left to inertia, you could go through life with childish understandings of very profound concepts. Now it's not automatic, but it is inertial. Like if you don't do anything about it, that's the sort of the way it'll go. The solution is to actively learn. And as your mind matures, you have the ability for greater nuance, greater sophistication, to open things up. And that's what we began to do just now, the last 2 days. And we've all heard chauffeur, and we know I'm not from the chauffeurs, and we've all took the apple and honey before, but to begin to look at it as maturing adult or adult to be B'nai Torah, and to begin to use the tools that we met Gemara when we were older. So we understand that Gemara is happening. We met the Briscoe when we were even older. Shirah, of course. But Chumash, remember, we were little kids. So we might make the mistake of assuming that Chumash is Chumash. Shirah, that's tea. Kadosh Baruch Hu is rather deep. The Chumash is very deep. The Yom Tovim are very deep. The insurance is not that. But we need to actively look for it. And if you do that, so then the Yontif is a whole different Yontif. You go into Yontif with sophisticated ideas, sophisticated understanding, and your mind and your heart and your neshama are open to be impacted by the Yontif, interacting with Yontif in a way that otherwise you couldn't have accessed. Rosh Hashanah is not just for children. You had, when you were 5 years old, you had a 5-year-old's Rosh Hashanah. That was appropriate. If you're, now you're 15 or 16 or 17 or 18, now it's time to have a Rosh Hashanah for a 15-year-old, for a 16-year-old, for a 17-year-old, for an 18-year-old. That's a line that I'm very fond of, a great line from Hukka. At the end of the Yontif, your attitude shouldn't be Nach Yontif Avek, but Nach Yontif Aran. Cameron and the Yontif have gone by, and the Yontif have gone in. It's going to go through you. It's not going to be Al Tishrei forever. But when it's Dal Tishrei, there should be an impact that stays behind. And not just sort of went over your shoulder and down to the rear view mirror, it went through me. And now I'm a different me, something different inside because I went through Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah Tavshin Ches left its impact. Mitzvah Rosh Hashanah Tavshin Ayin Tes with its impact. Rosh Hashanah of Tavshin Pei Tes. Mit Hashem. And Mit Hashem, Shibizalcha, Rosh Hashanah of Tav Lamites, and of Tav Memtes, they will each be their impacts. If you approach Rosh Hashanah with open mind and open hearts, thinking, understanding, preparing in one's mind, learning about the Yom Tov in advance, then you can interact with the Yom Tov in a whole different way. I hope that this was the beginning, a little taste of that, to begin to seek to understand the Yontif in a more nuanced, mature, sophisticated way. It should open us up to think of what's the avoda of the Yontif, should allow us to prepare more for the Yontif over the next 30 some odd hours, and to go through the Yontif in a more productive way. Okay, we're going to head now to the Beis HaMedrash. You head now to